The following program is by geeks and for geeks, with all the lack of normalcy that implies. Listener discretion is advised.
Loading Geek 2. Synchronizing Geeks.
By 2 version 2.0. The show that still takes three topics, throws them at two geeks. I'm Laz D, the pseudo Kiwi, coming to you from 3x2 Studios East.
And I am the illustrious Patrick M, coming to you from 3x2 Studios Ohio, where I have a sweatshirt I took out of the dryer. Warm! Yeah! Oh, I'm excited. You can tell I'm excited, can't you tell?
I can tell you're excited.
Woohoo! I'm not excited as excited too. As you'll be in a little while, but we'll get to that in a minute. First, we're going to take us to the news. This week in the news, while we were going to cover some other things, we're going to just take a couple minutes and talk about Harold Ramis, since a lot of his movies and things really influenced our lives, and since he died at the age of 69 in the last week.
Yeah, it was actually really sad. Of course, you know, Harold Ramis, most famous for his role as Egon in Ghostbusters. But also, he's also known as a director. He directed the first Ghostbusters. He was in Stripes. He wrote and directed Groundhog Day.
Yep. And let's not forget Animal House.
Of course.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing movies. And just we're deeply saddened by the loss of a comedic great.
Apparently it was ongoing health issues, so it's not a complete surprise. But the fact that we've lost somebody like that puts a dent in things like Ghostbusters and another thing. So we were even talking about what would happen with the future of Ghostbusters. And I think we're going to talk about reboot on that. But we'll definitely do a future episode, I think, with Ghostbusters doing a reboot. Does that sound good to you?
Sounds good to me.
So, yeah, reboots coming in the future. And Harold Ramis, we're going to miss you because you
rest in peace.
Awesome.
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 Rest in peace, our friend.
We're having way too much fun with this. Of course, he probably won it that way. And that's the news. Okay, today we are going to alter the format a little bit. You know, we've been changing it up here and there because the 3x2 cast since we rebooted because we were talking about our dicks every 5 seconds. Today, we are going to cut out our normal three topics, because we're going to go with a single topic, and we're going to do an extended interview with Star Trek actor Gary Graham.
Oh, and technically we're flipping the format, because this would be more like 2x3.
Yeah. As easy as can be. I like rhyming. But today we're talking Trek, since we're going to have a Trek actor on here later. We're going to talk about Trek. We're just going to kind of go through what's going on in the Trekverse 4 series. So let's start with the big one. The lens flare orgasm extravaganza known as Abrams Trek.
Yes. Now, I'm not a fan of the stories and these movies. I'm just not a fan of them. I'm sorry. I'm not going to apologize
for
not liking them, and I'm not going to expound on them, okay? I just don't like them. I think they were good sci-fi movies, and as far as the production values, they were amazing.
Except for the lens flare.
But they're not Star Trek movies. I'm sorry.
All right, here we go.
That's my two cents, and I'm out on that one.
I look at it this way. If we have these Trek movies, if they bring more people to check out the original series and they don't completely vomit, then I think it's a win-win because more Trekkies means more Trek.
That I will concede a point on, yes.
And there you go.
Talking about more Trek, we've got some amazing things coming up. We're going to touch on them in brief because, again, we've got this wonderful interview coming up, and we're just going to let our guest run riot with our show tonight.
Woo-hoo!
And So we have some great fan series out there. Of course, there's Star Trek Continues and there's Star Trek Phase 2. Those are the two most prominent fan series being produced right now. And we're hoping to talk to people who are behind those productions a little bit later on. I have spoken with James Cowley from Star Trek Phase 2, and he has expressed some interest in coming on the show, so hopefully we can do that.
Now, just a quick fill-in if you're not familiar. Star Trek Continues is where essentially they're starting exactly where the original series left off. Obviously, yes. With different actors and trying to basically continue exactly where they left off. Now, what about Star Trek Phase 2?
Phase 2 is actually it was born from Star Trek New Voyages, which was James Cowley's brainchild, and they basically are just running new kinds of stories altogether, not necessarily from any particular point, but it is during the Enterprise's original 5-year mission.
What other series do we have? Let's get into the ones we're going to talk. Some of the ones we're going to talk about. Which let's start with Enterprise Season 5.
Yes, Enterprise Season 5 is a grassroots campaign, basically looking to convince Paramount or CBS, the current copyright holders of the Star Trek franchise, to bring back Enterprise for a fifth season. Now, I am aware that some of the original cast have expressed interest in coming back for a fifth season. Hopefully we can see them in the not too distant future if they can bring it back up. We don't know yet. It's still very early days.
Now, a couple other ones that we're thinking that we want to talk about, specifically the ones we're going to talk with Gary on, Axanar and Renegades. So give us a little bit on what Axanar and Renegades.
Yeah, Star Trek Renegades is a new fan film coming out created and directed by Tim Russ of Star Trek Voyager fame, and also his earlier work of Gods and Men. And it's basically going to tell a whole new story about Star Trek. One thing I really like about it is it shows a much darker side to Star Trek that we've never seen on screen before in the Prime universe. So
Except for Deep Space Nine?
Still, it wasn't. I mean, this is darker. I believe it's darker than what we saw in Deep Space Nine.
Woohoo! And now Axanar.
That is basically it is a linchpin story for linking series together. It takes place about approximately 40 years prior to the original series. It tells the story of the famous Battle of Axanar during the 4 Years' War. Captain Garth of Izar gains the reputation of being the greatest Starfleet captain in history. It's sort of that area between the end of Enterprise and the beginning of Star Trek, the original series. One of the great things we get to see is we get to see Gary Graham return as Saval, who is basically coming to the end of his career and handing off the reins. Also, we get to see the likes of Michael Hogan and Richard Hatch, both of BSG lineage. Amazing, amazing, amazing. There's also J.G. Hertzler, who is coming in, who's also another Star Trek veteran, best known as General and Chancellor Martok from DS9. Oh, my goodness. I mean, just looking at the story is amazing. And, of course, both.
You're about to have a Trekgasm, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And both movies do also feature the work of Tobias Richter, who's, I'm sorry, I have to say it, his 3D work when it comes to Starship models is unparalleled, just completely unparalleled. And
yeah,
I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm just looking forward to what we're going to be seeing.
Now, specifically with Axanar, there is a Kickstarter campaign has just started up, started on the 1st,
right? That's right.
Yeah, started on the 1st.
That's right. So jump over to Kickstarter.com, search for Star Trek Axanar. It's AXANAR.
Or check our links, because we're going to have the links for pretty much everything. that we've talked yes. about in the notes today. So there's plenty of things to check out. And now let's check out the biggest and most awesome thing of all. Let's get to our interview with Gary Graham.
All right, everybody. I would just like to welcome to our show a very distinguished guest, a man who needs absolutely no introduction, in, especially in sci-fi circles, Mr. Gary Graham. Thank you for coming on the board to do the show with us tonight.
You're entirely welcome. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. It's we've been prior to the recording of this episode, we've been talking about some of the series and the movies that we've seen you in. I was made to promise that we wouldn't bring up Robot Jocks, but unfortunately, I have to.
who made you promise not to bring that up?
That was Patrick.
Wait a minute. I was the one who wanted to bring it up.
Well, Patrick, you're bigger than him, and come on, you can have your way with Patrick.
Yeah.
Come on, he knows, even Patrick, he's going to grudgingly admit you really want to talk a little about Robot Jocks.
Well, yeah, we were talking about whether or not we wanted to see Pacific Rim, and I said, no, I've already seen Robot Jocks. So, basically, we wanted to go over some of the projects you've been working in. I have to admit that by far, as in Enterprise, Saval was my favorite character, still is. That's not putting down the works of Scott Bakula or Jolene Blaylock. But yeah, yes, absolutely. Trust me, there's been many a discussion about Vulcan's finer features, but. As far as, with Axanar, it's great to see that you're reprising the role of Saval. I wanted to ask you, what is it like to be part of the greater Star Trek family? Because there are just so many wonderful actors, including yourself, that have been part of the movies and the series. What's it like been like for you?
Well, first of all, it's as you allude to, it's sort of like entering one of the royal families of science fiction history in the movies and television. So it's sort of daunting once you're a part of it and cranking out the movie or the episodes. You realize that my gosh, this is such a huge thing that Gene Roddenberry set into motion and has influenced so many lives and continues to, that it's at once daunting and humbling. So I'm just happy to be a part of it. I'm just delighted. Not only was even without the aura and the greatness of the of the whole series and movies, even without that, it's still exciting to be a part of such a great show. It's just great. It was great fun and required a lot of concentration and hard work. And just a side note, when I first got the role of Saval, I really didn't understand who the Vulcans were. I hadn't really researched it that much. I just figured, well, they hired me off of my I think it was 14 auditions I did for them over the other series, and finally I got this one, even though I'd done Tannis and Voyager, to get Saval was a great coup for me, and I thought, well, this is going to be exciting. That's great. So I got a makeup and wardrobe, and I showed up on the set of the pilot and walked up to Rick Berman and said, he looked at me and said, well, you look like a Vulcan. I said, well,
I hope so.
I want to feel like a Vulcan too. Tell me everything you know about the Vulcans.
So, oh my goodness.
he stared at me and said, oh my God, what have we done? he didn't say that, but that was on his face. And I said, listen, I'm just going with what you guys hired me to do. I decided that I was on the right path. So complete my journey now and fill me in on the history and what makes a Vulcan tick and tell me about me.
Oh my goodness.
He put his arm around me and we walked, and And he patiently just told me all about the Vulcans, and it wasn't what I thought at all. I had originally thought, well, they're devoid of emotions. I get it. And he said, no, it's quite the opposite. They are so festooned with emotion and passion and savage emotion that they realized early in their development that they had to find a way to contain and control these lest they completely destroy their race. So that was a big key to me understanding the Vulcans.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a real privilege to actually see you actually, in a way, almost redefine what being a Vulcan was like. You know, we're all fans of the show, of every incarnation of the show. So we saw Leonard Nimoy basically make the Vulcans from scratch based on what he thought was the character should be. But
Yes. Side note, he even invented the, or he came up with the salute, the Vulcan salute, live long and prosper.
Right.
He told that to us at in a convention in Bonn, Germany. He said he was asked to give some sign, you know, a salute by the Vulcans, and he's running it around in his head, and he comes up with this thing that he used to a rabbi in his synagogue used to give a blessing. And he would do it with that finger spread apart,
right?
You know, the live long and prosper salute. But it was a blessing. It was a Jewish blessing, and
I read that actually.
Genesis.
Yeah, I read that in an interview, and I was absolutely just floored as to how many Hebrew symbols have shown up not only in Star Trek but also in other sci-fi series. But yes, you know, I've actually sat in my wife as well is a huge fan of the Vulcan race, especially in Enterprise. And it was really great to see. Go ahead.
Thank you for saying those kind remarks about my take on the Vulcans. I never endeavored to give a new take on the Vulcans. What I did want to do, and what was really key for my character in this was a comment in the pilot that Archer says to Saval when I raise my voice to make a point in an argument, and he stops and looks at me and says, "A Vulcan raising his voice to make a point? You have been on too long, Ambassador. You have been on Earth too long, Ambassador." And I thought, this is the key to the guy's, this is the key to his story arc here. He has been on Earth too long. He's dying to go home, but he feels he has unfinished work here, and he needs to be the check and balance of these humans who just are hell bent on racing through the galaxy and creating havoc for the Vulcans. So he saw himself as a sort of a traffic cop. Whenever Archer had a new plan, he would be the nemesis of that, and also for career. For my longevity in the series, I wanted to make myself a worthy foil, an antagonist to his protagonist. So, and then they had the wisdom to write my arc in the series such that I come around to appreciating and even respecting and even sacrificing for the humans.
Oh, absolutely.
So it was good fun and very, very gratifying. And gratifying for your words. Thank you.
Well, absolutely. One thing I'd like to say is that, in a way, they foreshadowed how the character would play out towards the end of the series by, you know, showing that, in a way, with Saval having been on Earth as long as he had, he had grown to have an affinity for humans. And again, we see that played out really well towards the end when we lose Admiral Forrest. And again, I mean, it was a game changer. It was the tables had turned on the entire outlook of what Vulcans were.
Yes. And I was, not responsible for that, but I am happy to have been a part of it.
Well, it's great actually that you get to reprise the role in Star Trek Axanar. I was privileged enough to speak with Alec Peters today briefly in preparation for the interview, and he was basically explaining. You know, I'm sure he didn't understand or didn't realize I had sort of got myself clued up on the backstory of what Axanar was about. And so he wanted to share with me some little tidbits about your character. And, you know, as I understand it, in Axanar, we see Saval getting to the end of his career, and he's effectively handing the reins off to Sarek, who will then obviously begin his long run in the Star Trek universe.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, passing the football. I'm the Jay Leno to his Jimmy Fallon.
Well, I can only imagine that it's going to be this, you know, I guess, again, it's a page turner, especially for us. I guess I have to call us our Prime fans. You know, there has been a huge split between what is more popular, J.J. Abrams' reboot universe or the Star Trek Prime universe. And it's amazing.
And I'm
to
the
see.
Rod King, standing in between you both saying, can we get along?
What is your take on, just out of curiosity, what is your take on the J.J. Abrams reboot series?
I love it. I love it. I love it all. I thought J.J. Abrams, you know, what I've seen of it, it all looks just great. And I don't really get into the delineations and what was accurate in the original. And, you know, I don't really get into that because, you know, when it comes down to it, what was accurate in the original was cardboard sets and monsters that looked like they were put together by... you know, so it was just the state of the art. They were masters at, you know, when it came out, they had the best special effects they could afford and the best makeup artists and just everything that they could afford. And that's what you got. And, you know, jump ahead 30, 40 years and you've got unbelievable CGI effects and big budgets. And this is what is capable. So to compare the, you know, J.J. Abrams with the original series, it's a bit comparing lemons to apricots.
Fair enough.
And, I know I'm not a purist. I'm a Trekkie. I like Trek, but I like Trek, but I'm not a Trekkie in that I don't really study the folklore or the you know, the different cultures.
Absolutely. There was one other thing I wanted to touch on as far as your role as Saval, and that was that there currently is a grassroots campaign to revive Enterprise for a fifth season. Have you had any part in sort of bringing that together? Are you aware of that? What's going on?
No, I wasn't even aware of it.
Yeah, actually, there's...
My job is just to make sure that everybody has my agent's phone number.
Hey,
that's a good idea.
At the end of the day, that's all right. As long as they know how to get a hold of you for the work, that's the important thing.
Exactly. I put it on my Facebook page.
That's right.
Make sure everybody knows how to get in touch with me for work.
That's fantastic. Okay, let's just jump over real quick to your role as Ragnar. And first, in Of Gods and Men, and now, of course... Star Trek Renegades. Now, Star Trek Renegades is just from looking at the pedigree that is coming into this movie. You know, when we first looked at Of Gods and Men, you know, I realized, you know, everybody realized that Tim Russ brought everybody together and did what he could do on the budget that he had. So, you know, there was a lot of forgiveness as far as production values go. But seeing the leap that you guys have made from there to Renegades is... It's absolutely stunning.
Yeah, you guys think so?
Oh,
nice.
Yeah,
I'm glad to hear that.
Now, I mean, I've seen obviously I've seen like the work of Tobias Richter, who has done a lot of the CG, is doing it for Axanar and doing it for Renegades, uh-huh. and also is involved in like the Star Trek Phase 2. We do, you know, when we're seeing these fan series or these fan movies come together for people like me, it's really invigorating to. See that one, it's great to see that Star Trek is timeless, you know, and no matter how many years go by, there are always fans who want to know everything about it and also put their own spin on it. And then to see to see, you know, Tim Russ bring us back around again, and to bring you guys back into his little universe, his little pocket of Star Trek. You know, it gets us excited. It whips us fans into a frenzy. And for me personally, I like that it's a spin on characters we've never seen, or it's a refreshing of characters we have seen. So we have this story about this great threat again coming to the Federation. When you were working on that, or while you're working on the likes of Renegades, what do you see is the key to it being successful or being a real hit with both, say, purists and those who are just coming in?
Well, you know, I don't know. I always it's a thin line. It's a tightrope walk for your, you know, you're trying to grab and maintain an audience and a fan base, a loyalty for any of these projects. On the one hand, you don't want to alienate the people who've been there from the beginning, and they're you know, your Star Trek mantle. So you better stick to some of the rules that are established in Star Trek. Otherwise, call it something else and make up your own rules. So to play fast and loose with those rules is at your own peril, and not highly recommended if you want to build a, you know, big following, and which of course has to be the end game for any series that wants to go on. And I think they've done a good tightrope walk here with staying true to in Renegades, staying true to the originals, and yet bringing in dynamic new characters and different scenarios. And it's a whole new drama, but Trekified.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think they've done a good job of that very delicate tightrope walk.
From what I've seen, I guess we've been watching developments quite closely especially through the Facebook fan page. And when the second teaser trailer dropped recently, it was amazing to see the story, or to see the concepts that are behind what's going on. So I can only imagine that it's going to be one of those highly anticipated Star Trek fan movies. And I do realize, you know, I understand that they're not only just looking to make a movie out of it, but hopefully be able to expound on it and see if they can either make it an ongoing series, or perhaps be able to continue running with it. Again, you know, we're all greatly anticipating the release of that film later. Later 2014 that we're looking to see this?
I really don't have any idea.
Okay.
More than I.
Fair enough. All right. Just one last thing we want to go over, and I just wanted to really ask you, what is your favorite role in any of the series or movies that you've done?
I would have to say Matt Sykes in Alien Nation, by far.
My goodness, what you've done, that's one of the series that I grew up with, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have as well. I think at the time I was a little bit too young to see the movie with James Caan, but to see you and Eric Pierpont come into doing the series, you know, I remember thinking, this is fantastic. I love this. And the series was on. It was, I feel much like a Firefly. It just lived too short. It was a bright spark that came and went way too quickly. But I was also
that's how Fireflies are, really. They just live, they live, they pop, they die, and they're gone.
Absolutely.
But I agree with you. And I'm glad you mentioned Eric. Kenny Johnson brought together, he was approached with this at 20th Century Fox, and he saw the movie, and he said, well, okay, I don't really, I love, but there was one scene in the movie in which Matt Sykes pulls up and picks up George Francisco and takes him to work, the newcomer, and picks him up and takes him to work, and as they're driving off, He turns back and he waves to his family. The new, you know, the newcomers, the new aliens on the block, the social pariah, who are waving bye-bye to daddy, you know, and it looks so American family. And Kenny leaned forward and said, "Now that is your series right there. That, I'll do that series. Guess who's coming to dinner? You know, this aliens in the neighborhood. How do they adjust? What's their day like? What's this cops? What's George Francisco's life like in this squad room dealing with human cops and having to, you know, blessed with these amazing abilities and yet being discriminated against and being hated and trying to get rid of and then what I loved about, of course, was the arc, the change in any role you want to look for how the character changes. Where does he start and where does he end up and what's that odyssey like and that is what's really gratifying is when you get to really, you know, cover continents in terms of psychological and emotional character development. And that's what they had. It was just a dream role, a dream come true doing that role. It had everything from soup to nuts. It had dealing with aliens and science fiction aspects. It had, I got to play a cop. I got to handle firearms and bust people and throw them up against the wall and ruin their rights and it wasn't just a straight cop. It was a cocky cop. A cocky cop who makes up his rules as it goes along, and he feels free to break them just by using common sense and shortcutting them, but never shortcutting on the integrity of doing the right thing. He's also on top of that, he's one of my favorite qualities in human beings is the Lenny Skutniks of the world, and only the older people will understand who I'm talking about. Lenny Skutnik. He's the guy that Ronald Reagan used to refer to as that greatness within all Americans. He's the guy. I don't know if you remember. There was this jet plane crash landed and during the dead of winter, and it went into the ocean, and all these people were, you know, there's the picture of this woman who was just about to drown in this freezing cold water, and he just happened to be along the side. He parked the car, ran out, and just jumped in these freezing water and pulled him out. And I said, "Here's a guy. No, you know, now if you'd ask this guy, you want to jump into ice cold water today? No, probably not." But he saw a need and he did the right thing, and that's who Matt Sykes was ultimately. He was a reticent hero. He didn't really, you know, he would rather not do that, but you know, he just saw what was going down and he had to jump in and do the right thing. And I believe that quality exists in all human beings, you know, if they give over to it. And I was happy to represent that in Matt Sykes.
Well, the way you portrayed the role had me especially hooked on watching the series, and then of course when you came back for the direct, I guess the direct to DVD or direct to video movies later on, again, you know, we got to see you portray the character that you had loved so much in such a way that we wanted more. We wanted more, and hopefully we'll get to see you in plenty more work as far as sci-fi or anything else. I know you have a number of other projects that you're working on, and we can't wait to see it. And I would very much like to just thank you so much for your time with us tonight.
Absolutely.
And in the words of Wayne and Garth, we are most certainly not worthy.
Yes, you are. And thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me on to just do my, give my 2 cents worth. But I appreciate all the fan following. I appreciate the opportunity to be a part of the Star Trek universe, the sci-fi universe, really.
Absolutely. And we'll be watching the progress of everything you're in. And I can promise you that we will be waving your banner everywhere we go. Again, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, you guys. God bless you. Take care.
Thanks. All right. And that is all the time we have for this episode. This has been 3x2. I'm Laz D, the pseudo-Kiwi.
And I am the illustrious Patrick M.
Be sure to check us out on our Twitter feed at 3x2 Studios, on our website at 3x2cast.com, and yeah, we still have that Facebook fan page, and it might actually do some good this time.
Can we get the dial-up bulletin board so you can dial into it? That would be
cool. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah. We're out.
This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License.